Yes, Your Honor. Thank you, and good morning. May it please the court, I'm Jennifer Friedman from the San Francisco Public Defender's Office on behalf of petitioner Mario Ixchot-Perez, who's watching today by video. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
Mr. Ixchot was called away from his wife's hospital bed, where she was in labor with their first child, under the false pretense that a probation officer just needed his signature. Instead, he was arrested by ICE, leaving his wife no indication of what had happened. The series of events that culminated in this arrest revealed a sequence of actions by ICE officers that was so fundamentally unfair at every step, it shocks the conscience and requires suppression of his subsequent admission of alienage or termination under the regulatory violations.
Counsel, this is a very significant and unfortunate factual situation, but can you give me the case or cases that you rely upon to show that this was an egregious violation of the Fourth Amendment? Because as you know, that's what you have to do to get that applicable to an immigration case. What's your answer to that?
Yes, Your Honor. There are two separate egregious Fourth Amendment violations here. The first one is derived from the warrantless search of Mr. Ixchot's home. And there, although his sister, Cecilia, did consent to the ICE officer's entry to the home, it was under an improper ruse under this court's case of U.S. v. Boston.
Let's assume for a moment, just for purposes of discussion, that the entry into the home was improper. I'm not sure it was, but let's assume that for a moment. What are you seeking to suppress as a result of that entry?
Mr. Ixchot's admission of alienage after he was arrested, because the improper search of the home, which has been found by this court to be an egregious Fourth Amendment violation.
Right. I've assumed that. You don't have to argue it for the moment. I'm not sure you're right, but I've assumed it. What case do we have that says what case does anybody have? I couldn't find one that says if there's an improper search and as a result of that search, somebody learns where someone is, the subsequent arrest is illegal.
The fact of his location is an immediate fruit of that search. And then the ICE officers proceed to that.
That's your argument. I understand that's your argument. It's probably a pretty good argument if we're not in egregious land. But tell me, as Judge Smith asked at the beginning, what case we have that says that discovering someone's location through an improper search invalidates the arrest?
I think that it's a question of the attenuation. I don't have a case site for you, Your Honor.
No, I'm not talking about attenuation. I'm just saying, is there a case wholly apart from attenuation? Let's assume the sister says, oh, he's outside in the shed. And so they go find him in the shed and arrest him there. What case do we have that says that an arrest becomes illegal because the government, through an improper search, learned where the person arrested was?
Your Honor, my position is that the Fourth Amendment violation and the regulatory violation from that search are sufficient to suppress the alienage. I'm not arguing that it is the Fourth Amendment violation is egregious and the regulatory violation do warrant both the suppression and the termination of the case.
You say the regulatory violation, you mean the special places, in this case, the hospital? Is that what you're talking about?
Your Honor, in addition to the sensitive location memorandum being violated, there are two regulatory violations that also took place. There is a regulation that protects against warrantless entry into the home, which is 8 CFR 287.8 F2, and there is a regulation protecting against an arrest without probable cause.
Can we focus on this? Well, there's also a regulation that prohibits arrest without a warrant.
Yes, Your Honor.
In the absence of some exigent circumstances.
Indeed, Your Honor, and that regulation was also violated here.
Okay, if that regulation was violated...
Yes, Your Honor.
And the IJ and the BIA didn't find a violation. Let's assume they were wrong.
That's correct.
If that regulation was violated, wouldn't we have to remand for the BIA and IJ to determine whether or not his admission of alienage was a fruit of that violation?
No, Your Honor. Under this court's decision in Sanchez versus Sessions, you can assume prejudice is presumed where a regulation...
No, not in a non-constitutional, not for a regulatory violation. It's presumed for a constitutional violation. I'm asking you to focus simply on the regulatory violation. Wouldn't you then have to go show prejudice?
When the regulatory violation is one whose compliance is required by the Constitution, it does require termination.
You and I are talking past each other, so let me be more explicit.
I apologize.
Let me ask you to assume that there was probable cause to arrest, but they violated the regulation by failing to get a warrant. Under that circumstance, wouldn't we have to send it back so the issue of prejudice would be addressed?
Your Honor, I think that we've also established, even if we're not presuming prejudice, I think that we have also established that there is actual prejudice here. The panel may find it appropriate to remand to have that question considered in the first instance by the agency.
Let me tell you why I'm asking the question. I'm not sure that it's clear that I think you've got a great argument that the statement of alienage is the fruit of the arrest. It's not clear to me that that's true as a matter of law. Isn't that a factual inquiry?
Your Honor, I think it is true that the second constitutional violation where he was arrested without probable cause is more directly related to the admission.
Right. And if you established a constitutional violation, you would not have to show prejudice. I understand that. I'm just asking you to assume that you haven't established a constitutional violation, but merely a regulatory one. And it seems to me you have. Under those circumstances, what should we do?
Your Honor, this court's decision in Sanchez versus Sessions held that in a case where a regulation, and that dealt with the regulations under 8 CFR 287.8, and it found that they were constitutionally required.
I understand, and you and I are talking past each other. I understand your argument that there was a violation of the Constitution here, but I don't think the Constitution requires an arrest warrant under these circumstances. It may require probable cause, but it probably doesn't require an arrest warrant. So let's assume it's only the regulation that requires a warrant.
Your Honor, the regulation has an exception for where there is probable cause and there's been a determination that the non-citizen is likely to escape.
I want to deviate from this a little bit because it's not clear to me from looking at the record that ICE didn't know the alienage before any of this occurred. So let's just assume for a moment that they knew perfectly well that your client was not a U.S. citizen, was here improperly. They were just looking for him. If that's the case, what would be suppressed?
Your Honor, the government has not submitted any documents, any evidence to meet their burden of establishing by clear and convincing evidence Mr. Ixchop alienage that is not directly derived from his admission on April 29th, 2014. They've submitted evidence that relates to that. And in fact, they've submitted evidence that establishes that they didn't know who he was or where he was from before then. Because the only evidence that they have in support of the probable cause to arrest him, which does not constitute proper probable cause, is a records check, which refers to the fact that a Mr. Alexander Cruz Ramirez was voluntarily returned to Mexico in 1997. It has no information relating to Mr. Ixchop or a voluntary return to Guatemala.
Well, that's not exactly true. It may not be enough, but it's not exactly an exactly true statement. They say, we learned beforehand that this gentleman had been convicted for the fifth time, I think, or fourth time of DUI.
Correct,
we made a records check and determined that he was in the country illegally. The record that was later produced may or may not support that, but they do say they made a record check beforehand and determined he was in the country illegally. And the record that they later produced did have his identification number and date of birth, did it not?
Related to his criminal arrest for the DUI, it did, Your Honor.
Right, and the internal, the 213, the reference to the other person, the record that they had in the about the other name, if you will, did have your client's date of birth and identification number, didn't it?
The identification number was assigned to Mr. Ixchop after his arrest on April 29, 2014.
Okay, what about date of birth?
Mr. Cruz Ramirez and Mr. Ixchop Perez have the same date of birth, which right. is a possible explanation for how the two records came to be associated with each other.
So can I get back? Judge Smith, go ahead.
That they had before did not provide any information about the alienage of your client?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I missed the beginning.
Are you saying that the records and the information that ICE had before the arrest did not have any information on there about the alienage of your client?
That is
they found out exclusively from talking to your client.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct. And they have since submitted evidence relating to my client's alienage, but all of that is derived from the admission after his improper arrest on April 29, 2014.
So they went to the house just because they thought it would be fun to do that? They didn't think he was an alien?
Your Honor, it goes back to the U.S. visit database connection. What the record is completely missing is any information about how Mr. Ixchop's name and identity came to be associated with the voluntary return to Mexico of Mr. Cruz Ramirez.
Now, I understand that this is great cross-examination of what they knew at the time, but the officers say, at least in the I-213, before we went to arrest him, we made a records check and we determined that he was an alien. In fact, he is. Nobody disputes that he is. So I'm getting back to Judge Ezra's question in the previous argument. Let's assume we suppressed this and we sent it back and your client were called to the stand in a civil proceeding and the government said to him, as they're entitled to, where are you a native of and were you lawfully admitted to the United States? If he takes the fifth, that's evidence that he wasn't. And if he says the fact we all know to be true, he was. So what are we seeking to gain here?
Your Honor, with all due respect, that is a question that is not before this court right now. If his alienage is submitted, there would be if his alienage were suppressed, there would be a factual question as to whether or not the government could sustain it without his admission. The probable cause determination.
I understand there's on this record, they may not be able to sustain it without his admission. My question is, if we send it back, isn't it absolutely certain as a matter of fact that they will establish his alienage?
Your Honor, I would not agree that it is. And I would independently note that this panel can terminate for the regulatory violations and it wouldn't be sent back at all under Sanchez versus Session. I'd also like to note that there's evidence in the record
stop for a second. Let's assume we terminated. Couldn't they reinstitute?
They could try, Your Honor. Absolutely.
Well, and so under the circumstance I'm talking about, I'm trying to figure out if it makes sense when the agency violates its regs to call them to account and punish them. I'm trying to figure out what your client gets out of this.
Your Honor, if they were to try to. The question of what would happen next there's a lot of speculation about it and it doesn't legally bear on what the proper remedy is for the violations that occurred in this case. And if I can go back to the probable cause determination that relies on U.S. visit, As the Central District of California found after a 7-day trial, the databases that ICE relies on are erroneous from 30 to 42% of the time. And ICE
is there any evidence in this case that they're erroneous? Is there any evidence that they erroneously determined that? No, let me finish. You can answer. Is there any evidence that your client that the ICE erroneously determined through this? They say they did a records check and determined your client was an alien. Is there any evidence that they were mistaken in that determination?
The question isn't whether they were wrong about whether he was an alien. The question is whether it was sufficient to sustain probable cause when the database that is wrong so frequently gave them a record that on its face does not apply to Mr. Ixchaw.
And your argument's terrific. You're a very good lawyer. Your argument's terrific. It's well done in the briefs. You may prevail on it. I'm asking a very specific question, and I think it is a yes or no answer. Is there any evidence in this record that your client is not an alien?
No, Your Honor, and that's not the
argument
that we're putting forward.
Okay.
But I do believe that that is not a relevant question, and not one that
we're looking for. You are an excellent lawyer. You might even be a better member of Congress because you're very good at not answering that question.
Yeah. Okay.
And the reason that I want to refocus the panel's attention is because I don't think that the answer to that question is determinative of my arguments. You know, the argument is that they entered that Cecilia's consent was invalid and that violates the regulation and the Fourth Amendment, and that their probable cause was insufficient to carry forward an arrest that also violates the Fourth Amendment and the regulatory violation.
Okay, and I think you made that point, and your time is up. So we thank you very much. We'll now hear argument from Mr. Yosef from the Department of Justice. And I think you're by phone, right, Mr. Yosef?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. May it please the court, you know, Yosef for the government. Kind of jumping into, I think, where Judge Hurwitz was going with the idea of remedy in this case, and I think that kind of goes to why there's limited application of the exclusionary rule in removal proceedings. There is that notion that the as Lopez-Mendoza indicated, that a removal proceeding is intended to provide nothing more than a streamlined determination of eligibility to remain in the country. That's why even in situations where there are violations of the Fourth Amendment, that's insufficient, as Your Honors have discussed. There needs to be a showing of egregiousness.
Also a requirement that that the government abide by its own regulations, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. There's a regulation here that rather clearly to me requires that you get a warrant under these circumstances. And yet they had all, and it's not like there was any exigency here. I mean, they planned to go out to his house. They looked for him all day. They made a records check, according to them, beforehand. So let's assume you violated that regulation. Isn't that a sufficient basis for us to grant the petition?
Your Honor, what specific is it? Making an arrest without a warrant if there's reason to believe that the person is unlawfully present? Is that
the reg requires regulation? Warrant in the absence of some exigency. I'm not wording it correctly. I mean, some reason to think that he might flee or something else. You didn't get a warrant. Had all day to get a warrant. You can get a warrant in 7 seconds, in my experience. That violates the regs. Why isn't that a sufficient reason for us to grant the petition?
Well, Your Honor, I, if we're taking the premise of the fact that they did violate that regulation, if that's the framing of your question, then I think it would be need to send back to address the prejudice issue by the agency. We need to address.
Yeah, we'd have to grant the petition in order to send it back, wouldn't we?
Yeah, in that sense, if there is the idea, if just based on the premise of your question, then yeah, if that violation, then it would need to address the prejudice.
Now here's my question: doesn't that reopen the proceedings entirely in front of the IJ?
In other words, if
we did that, then with respect to the alleged Fourth Amendment violation and entering into the house, I suppose you could call the officers who could say, look, I told, you know, our ICE status was apparent. It was on the front of our jerseys. You could ask, the judge could consider whether the sister was credible or not credible. You could explore further what they knew before they went to arrest. So I'm trying to figure out if we have to grant the petition and remand anyway, whether or not we should ask for a more fulsome discussion of those issues on remand by either the IJ or the BIA.
Well, Your Honor, this kind of falls under the matter of Barcenas case, where the nature of how this, if the petitioner bears the burden of demonstrating that the evidence should be excluded, and they have to present a prima facie case of, for example, with an egregious constitutional violation. If they were
no,
to
not
meet
just
that
a constitutional
burden,
violation, a regulatory violation. That's why you and your colleague, and I don't blame you. I love to argue about the Constitution too, but I'm saying assume no constitutional violation just for purposes of my discussion. Once we find the regulatory violation, and I think there is one, and have to send it back for a determination of prejudice because nobody ever addressed that, why not then ask the agency to make a complete record on all these other issues?
Well, I think you're right. My point from the discussing kind of the Fourth Amendment, the way that the Fourth Amendment are handled is at that point, then the government has the opportunity, if say a violation was demonstrated of the Fourth Amendment, the government has the opportunity to rebut that determination. So I think maybe within the regulatory scheme, it would be the same sort of situation where then
right.
DHS
and
would
I'm
have
asking,
the
I'm
opportunity
asking a
to present
housekeeping
that.
Question. I'm asking a housekeeping yeah. question because this case presents a bunch of interesting issues. But it seems to me, mm-hmm. I may be wrong, and you can tell me why I'm wrong, rather clear that this regulation was violated. It also seems to me rather clear that nobody addressed whether or not prejudice resulted from that violation of the regulation. The rest of the record is really rather unclear, as Judge Smith's questions and mine, I think, demonstrated, and we would be greatly aided by a clearer record. So why shouldn't we just remand because of this regulatory violation? Point out, judge wants to have an evidentiary hearing, that's fine, that questions about consent and what the officers did beforehand aren't clearly established on this record because it was simply done without an evidentiary hearing, and that we ought to have one and get a record. What's wrong with that?
Well, that would be the case if the finding of a violation. I guess I take this opportunity to disagree that there was indeed a violation of that regulation.
Okay, so tell me why there wasn't.
Well, the officers are permitted to arrest someone without a warrant if they have reason to believe the person is unlawfully present in the United States. They had reason to believe here that he wasn't. And I would note that the individual was apprehended by what was described in I-213 as the ICE fugitive team. And this was based off of, they determined that the petitioner who had extensive criminal history, that this individual was unlawfully present and it was necessary to apprehend him. I think that they did that.
You know, let's assume that he was unlawfully present. Judge Smith.
This occurred before the arrest?
What are you asking?
Review of the records. That where in the record is it clear that a determination was made that this particular person was in fact an alien? I gather was there's some confusion about the identity of the people, their same birthdays and so on, but there was some confusion. If it's clear that they knew before they went to the house that he was an alien, then the issue that Ms. Friedland is arguing about maybe goes away because they already had probable cause to arrest him. But what's your best evidence in the record that they knew absolutely that this man was an alien?
Well, specifically I-213, the narrative indicates that the officers were tasked to locate and arrest the petitioner. It notes his date of birth and identifies him as a known criminal alien at the following address, and that's where they went to. And that information was obtained after the record check, which identified him as someone who had come up as someone who was unlawfully present. So that's
where did that come from? I know the 113, I think that maybe was checked afterwards, but where in advance of the arrest did the ICE determine that this man was an alien and needed to be arrested?
I think the I-213 identifies that there was a record check conducted, and that record check based on their understanding of that record check, that he was unlawfully present, and it was that they cite to that 1997 voluntary return.
Well, it seems like we've got the cat chasing his tail here. She, counsel for the petitioner, suggests that, as I understand it, that a warrant was needed here. You say that they had information, I'm gathering that you said in response to Judge Smith's question, that they had information beforehand that he was an alien, and not only an alien, but an alien with a criminal record. So I presume you're suggesting that they didn't need a warrant. And then we're back to Judge Hurwitz again, where the question is whether the regs required him or them to get the warrant. And of course, Ms. Friedman argues it's a constitutional issue. And so it seems to me like the record is at a point where remand would give the proper immigration authorities an opportunity to clear the record. I mean, where am I missing something here?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's important to take a step back and understand that based on everything that happened for the petitioner coming to the attention of ICE, for the going to his last known address, and then arresting him when they discovered his location. At the end of the day, the agency here conducted the record check, and everything was indeed was spot on. They were accurate that the individual was unlawfully present. So the agency here in their
approach. Let me read you the reg. Sure. The reg is very specific. It's 8 CFR 287.8, subsection C, subsection 2, subsection I. But it's all in the, it's identified in the briefing. It says a warrant of arrest shall be obtained except when the designated immigration officer has reason to believe that the person is likely to escape before a warrant can be obtained. I find no evidence in this record that this Mr. Ixchop was likely to escape before a warrant could be obtained. They took a long time to get to where he was. They knew when they went out to get him where he lived. He's been in the country for more years than he was entitled to, probably. He's been convicted a bunch of times in court and always showed up for his appearances. What evidence is there in this record that would give an immigration officer any reason to believe that he was likely to escape before a warrant could be obtained?
Your Honor, without trying to put ourselves in the shoes of the law enforcement officers, but the fact that the individual had an extensive criminal history, I think 5 convictions, I think that might have brought individuals with criminal histories, criminal aliens are prioritized in terms for enforcement.
They're prioritized for arrest. And I'm granting you for purposes of this question that you had ample reason to think he was an alien and that you knew he'd been convicted of DUI, I think 4 or 5 times before. One of them may have occurred after, so maybe it's only 4 times. But he'd been in the country for a long time. He had a home. His wife is giving birth at a hospital. Put aside all that other stuff. Surely this is not a case in which there's any reason to think that he's going to flee before you can arrest him. And there's plenty of time to get a warrant. So what's the excuse for not getting one?
I can't put myself in their shoes, but at the same time, again, that's kind of stepping into the position of law enforcement officers in executing their duties in such a way that I don't know if we're able to do that in this situation. They based it on the fact that he was a known criminal alien with an extensive criminal history, and that was what motivated them to arrest and apprehend him. That was the determination they made.
That does not answer Judge Hurwitz's question. If they had that information beforehand, which you've said, why could they not have gotten a warrant based upon that, based on their probable cause, and just gone and arrested him? And all they needed to do was just find him. Why not?
I mean, Ideally, Your Honor, they would have obtained a warrant in this situation. Ideally, but with the facts we have before us, this isn't a perfect situation, but it's also not a situation that would warrant suppression of evidence or exclusion of evidence in this case.
What's the reason why the regulation cited by Judge Hurwitz did not have to be complied with?
Well, the thing is, I disagree that it wasn't complied with. I understand that. They didn't have a warrant, but they had reason to believe you to flee, and that was their determination that they had reason to believe you to flee based on the fact that his criminal status.
No record at all about his fleeing. Nothing. Where is it? Where is it in the record?
I agree, Your Honor. There isn't any information addressing that. It's based on the determination by the ICE agent in concluding that this individual should be apprehended, and they specifically in the I-213 cite his criminal history as why he was tasked, why the ICE fugitive team was tasked with specifically apprehending him. So
Counsel, I understand your argument is that we shouldn't be putting ourselves in the position of law enforcement, and I couldn't agree with you more if we had a circumstance where some exigency was in the record and we were trying to second guess the law enforcement officers as to whether or not that exigency was sufficient or insufficient. I think the point that was made by both of my distinguished colleagues was that there was absolutely no exigency in the record. Now, maybe there is an exigency, and that would be why you would want to remand so that somebody could address it. Some law enforcement officer could say, look, this guy had this kind of a record and that kind of a record, and we were absolutely convinced that he was heading out the door. But we don't have anything like that here. And you want to have us presume or imply or suggest that that must have been it based on his record. But I don't know that we can do that.
Do either of my colleagues have additional questions for Mr. Yosef? His time is up, but if you have additional questions, we can proceed.
Yeah, I have one more question, Judge Smith, and I want to ask it to be fair to the government, because I want to ask it to counsel for petitioner too. It seems to me the reason I'm harping on this warrant issue is that if the agents had gone to a neutral magistrate to get a warrant, we would have a record about what they knew at the time and where they'd gotten it from. And it seems to me that this violation is what makes this case on its facts difficult. And so I want to ask the government to respond to that. It's not just a technical violation. Had they gone and gotten a warrant, almost all the other issues would go away. We would know what probable cause they had at the time and what they knew when they went to his house and et cetera. But we don't know that in this case because we don't have a record before a magistrate. So I'd ask the government to respond to that. And for the petitioner, I'd ask, isn't that exactly the reason why we ought to send it back for further proceedings rather than terminate?
Well, Your Honors, I do take that point, and I understand that it would have been a much better case here for us if the record did include that warrant and that explanation on the part of ICE and why they pursued him. And I think what we have here before us in the record is they provide what they identified as relevant in terms of justifying his arrest and apprehension, which is identifying with a criminal alien and an individual who was known to be unlawfully present and had a history of a criminal history. I think that's what would address that. But I think it's important to try to take a step back again, that at the end of all this, the petitioner was in fact an individual who admitted that he was unlawfully present. And that is an issue that's not up for in dispute. He admitted it in removal proceedings and at the time of apprehension. And I think that's why in terms of applying the exclusionary rule in these proceedings is generally done in limited situations. And I don't believe this is a situation that would warrant exclusion of that evidence. And therefore, that's why the petition should be denied. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Now, Ms. Friedman has used up her time, but do either of my colleagues have questions for her? I think you said, Judge Hurwitz, that you did have a question for her. I
did, and it was the point that the government brought up at the end. Let's assume that his admission is suppressed, his admission to police officers. What do you do with your response to the NTA that says isn't there an admission, a judicial admission also?
Your Honor, there are rules about when the admission that he made in any admissions he made in proceedings all derived from the prejudice from the initial arrest. I would like to respond briefly to a couple of things that my friend argued. First of all, I would submit that the record shows that the records checks performed was the record that we have before us in front of U.S. Visit, and so from the U.S. Visit database. I think that that is the information that they had. And because there were constitutional violations here, I would invite this court to terminate, not send back for any more evidentiary hearings. There was unlawful conduct by the agency here, and this panel cannot endorse it.
Your view is that a remand is an endorsement? A remand for factual findings is an endorsement?
No, Your Honor. I would argue that finding that the violations of the regulations do not warrant termination under Sanchez v. Sessions, I argue that they do. My friend argued that the I-213 is the evidence that's available in the record on alienage. The case law says that an I-213 is presumptively reliable only but that presumption is overcome when there is evidence to the contrary. And here we do have evidence to the contrary. We know what the record check showed. The record check showed that someone by a different name was deported to a different country. If I may also go back to the question about what case law I have about the search,
I must say you're an able lawyer. You've gone from our having colleagues ask questions to reinitiating the argument. Let me ask either of my colleagues have additional questions for Ms. Friedman?
I do not.
We thank you both for your argument. You're both fine lawyers. We appreciate your help in this case. And the case just argued is submitted, and the court stands in recess for the day.
Thank you.
This court stands in recess, is adjourned.